And that is that. Good afternoon. It is 12:30 on this pretty darn fantastic Thursday afternoon in Port Townsend. That is where most of us are, including John Morrow. John Morrow is the city manager. We are introducing both John Morrow as soon as he unmutes himself, and also Dr. Linda Rosenberry, and he will introduce her. Bureaucracy now, a word I will stumble over every time I try to say it. A weekly opportunity to talk about what's going on in Port Townsend city government. John is a city manager. John, you're going to lead this conversation, and better than I did, introduce Dr. Linda.
Well, hey, thanks, Phil. And stumble, you did not. Let's just be clear. It is a mouthful. Let me just get right to it. I love having Dr. Linda Rosenberry on this show. She's been here before. We haven't scared her away. But I think particularly today, you know, being the first week of school and as the school superintendent for the Port Townsend School District, it's a pretty big week for her and her team and for the community. And it's also a great time to talk about leadership, because we kicked this off a couple weeks ago. I said, you know, let's do a little mini series. I tongue in cheek called it Leadership for a Change. Interpret that however you wish. But I thought, let's get some dynamic leaders with different perspectives to come onto Bureaucracy Now and to talk about how they show up for challenging times, their leadership challenges and successes, advice to the next generation of leaders. And I guess a couple of weeks ago, we ended up talking a lot about embracing conflict in the workplace as a leader. So I'm delighted that Dr. Linda is with us today. Hi. Welcome.
Hi, John. Thanks so much for having me.
So, Phil, I don't want to exclude you from this conversation, because I bet you have either some great questions or some deep insights about leadership and traits of a leader or misperceptions. But I wanted to get us started by just maybe turning the floor over to Linda and saying, hey, when you think of leadership, what comes to mind? What practices, principles, experiences come to your mind?
Thanks so much for having me. It is the first week of school, so it's a great time. I have been here in Port Townsend for a little over a year now. And one of the first parts of leadership that I think is important is how any good leader should enter an organization, which is listening and learning. So last year when I arrived to town in this new role, I made sure to not assume I knew what was going on, but actually listen to the history and gather lots of different perspectives. And it was important for me to not only listen and process the people who were coming and seeking me out to tell me the way things were and how things should change, but for me to seek out those that the system hadn't worked for. And so that was an important part of leadership, was to really make sure that I was hearing from a wide range of stakeholders and listening and learning. Another piece in my first year was about psychological safety. So that's a concept that I think was coined by Amy Edmondson at the Harvard Business School. And it's this idea that the leader needs to make sure that all employees, no matter what level they are within the organization, feel comfortable speaking out when they see something going wrong, when they make a mistake. So I worked real hard last year, especially with the principals and the people I work closest with, to make sure if people felt safe saying, this isn't going well, or I made this mistake, let's work together to fix it. So there's just two things to start.
I love that. I think, you know, people don't often associate leaders with mistakes, but I feel like, at least from my experience, I make plenty of them, and with, you know, mea culpa to everybody listening, you're very aware of that. But that's where you learn the most. And learning, I think of a superintendent, that's like your business, is community and learning and listening. I'd like to put to rest a few misconceptions about leadership, including great leaders don't make mistakes. My perspective is that that's like the learning edge. That's when you actually learn the most and can carry that forward into your leadership. What do you think? Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think being vulnerable as the leader gives other people permission to admit when they might have done something wrong. People spend a lot of energy at work trying to prove to others that they're good enough. And I wanted to relieve that burden from people and let them know we're all good enough. We're all trying our best. I believe that. And we're going to work together to meet our goals. So one of the things I'm working on this year with the entire staff is a culture of feedback. How do we say to someone, hey, this happened, or I saw you say this to a student and it didn't land well. Let's talk about it. What was your intention? What could you have done differently? And how that feedback could actually strengthen the relationship rather than hurt it. And transitioning from the big city of New York and Seattle to coming here, I realized that relationships are even more prized, because in New York City, if you piss someone off, you probably won't see them the very next day or learn that they're intimately connected to a lot of people in your universe. Mm-hmm. But here in Port Townsend, we see the same people a lot. We need to maintain those relationships. And I think I have a hypothesis that it's led people to not always be direct when they're having trouble with someone. And that tends to fester and lead to this silent conflict that doesn't serve anyone. And so we're equipping our staff with the tools to be able to say with love and compassion, hey, we were in this situation together and you did this and here's the impact. What do you think? How do we move forward? And hopefully that'll work to strengthen our community and our culture.
Oh, I love it. I mean, this really resonates, because I think, you know, one of the many books that my leadership team and I have read is a Brené Brown book, one of many, but, you know, Dare to Lead. And, you know, the quote, clear is kind, comes from that book, I believe. And I think that's so important, because it's not a blank check just to say what you think and it might offend somebody. You got to be careful about how impactful your words are, but actually possibly as careful about what you don't say, and you know, how it's a missed opportunity to provide care and kindness by providing feedback. And especially as leaders and as managers, because they're two different things, but I think managers do have a responsibility to provide feedback, positive and negative. Tends to be, you know, the more negative, not in the public eye, for instance, and the more public in the public eye. I try to do that with my department directors, for instance, although they almost, you know, always walk on water. So it's hard to find the critical feedback. But I think it really resonates, the culture of feedback. And I'm wondering, how does that work with the wider community? Because the school district, the city, agencies like ours receive feedback constantly. And sometimes it's seen as adversarial or anonymous, but for it to be impactful and to actually contribute, what needs to happen?
Well, first, the receiver needs to see feedback as a gift. So, and also realize that a lot of times feedback is more about the person giving it than the person receiving it. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that to discount the feedback, but to say it's an opportunity to learn about what people care about, what people are afraid of. Mm-hmm. And so when I think about the larger community here and feedback, is how do we probe a little deeper when we hear it to understand what is the outcome people want? Mm-hmm. Sometimes people just want to vent, and that's okay. But most of the time, they haven't yet envisioned what a outcome can be, what the possibilities can be. And especially in the schools, when those outcomes are related to children, it's so crucial that we don't let the conflicts between adults, even if both are definitely right, how do we come together to make sure that we get the outcome for the child? Because at the end of the day, our values are actually usually quite aligned. Yes. We care for our kids. We want the best for them. And so how do we put aside some of the nitpicking or minor adult disagreements to make sure we're focused on that outcome for children?
Yeah, I really love that. I feel like the passion, it comes out sometimes not in a healthy way, but it's there. And, you know, when I'm trying to be as kind as I can be, and I hear somebody maybe yelling or saying unkind things, I try to think about, well, they care, you know? And so at least there's a base level of like, almost exclusively, I talk with people every day, staff, you know, community members, elected officials who really care about this place and about the people and the history and the future here. It's a really good starting point. You know, and I think you build that trust, and that's something I talked about a couple of weeks ago, kind of the core to some of this thing is, and that allows you to really stretch into some, you know, beyond your normal comfort zone to have difficult conversations. And I mean, I'll even say, maybe it's not fair to do so on the air because we clearly did not rehearse this. But, you know, Dr. Linda, we've had conversations like this, you know, and I feel like the trust that I have with you as a leader and the relationship we have as institutions and as leaders of our organizations has allowed us to have some conversations about things that some people would run for the hills, but we have a productive conversation, and I always take away a lesson learned.
Mm. Yeah, and so I always reflect on how we're navigating conflict when we have it. We do have it in private, which is helpful to the city, I think, because sure. I don't want to distract from the collaboration we have. But there are going to be times where our interests are not exactly aligned, or we're still trying to figure out how to have a symbiotic relationship. And I think the fact that we can speak openly about what our different roles are and find it helps us find an outcome that's better for all. The worst is if we were to then one of side just say, fine, I'll agree to disagree, I'll accept this outcome. And then I go around town for 5 years talking about how that's not what I really wanted from the city. That's what we want to avoid.
Yes. Oh, that's refreshing. I think that behavior is, I mean, it does happen and has happened. And I think we just save ourselves a lot of time and effort. And I was just speaking with a council member before this call, and this came up, and the opportunity costs on the community of if leaders aren't leading in that kind of courageous culture of feedback, honest, vulnerable way, the people who really suffer, besides their teams, is the community we serve. And I'm not saying that I've nailed it and I'm perfect. I'm still learning every day. But that's part of what we owe the community, is to make sure we navigate that terrain in a way that brings common good instead of distraction.
I think I found a non-example when I was living in New York City. You know, I was there for 16 years. I was a middle school principal. And Mayor Bill de Blasio and Governor Andrew Cuomo were always publicly at odds. And it was so distracting to see their, like, what felt like ego-driven pettiness about things related to students and the city happening in the public view. So I said, I never want to be that way.
Well, luckily, Mayor Faber and Governor Inslee have a great relationship. So we don't replay that here in Washington State. So, Dr. Linda, do you have, aside from what you've shared already about, you know, being good enough and the culture of feedback and vulnerability and psychological safety and listening and learning, I mean, it's a treasure trove of good advice, but thinking about your superintendent hat and those inside your organizations, like principals and teachers that you work with and the students that you serve, for an up and coming leader or somebody who's just gotten really excited about leadership as a topic, what are some basic, what kind of advice could you offer somebody around the topic of leadership beyond what you've already shared?
Well, I'll hodgepodge a few concepts. So one is get up on the balcony, and that's from Ron Heifetz, also of Harvard Business School and Kennedy School of Government. So getting up on the balcony means, how do you try to remove yourself and your emotions from the situation and really look down and say, what is happening here? Mm-hmm. And so when you get up on the balcony, how can you try to be as objective as possible. Mm-hmm. And one of my professors helped me by saying, what's the most generous interpretation you can have of the other person's actions? So often when we're involved in the conflict or in a leadership role, we're caught up in our perspective and we think that other person is against us. But what if we said, what is the most generous interpretation of why, let's say, that parent is emailing the school board? Mm-hmm. And having that generous interpretation helps, I think, engage in the conflict with more a spirit of inquiry and trust and a focus on relationships and community. Mm-hmm. So for new leaders, I would say to focus a lot on that. And the underpinning of that has to be really knowing yourself.
Yeah.
Why do you want to be a leader? What are your identities and how do they play out in this American culture? Like for me as a woman, I had to realize that in certain meetings that were male dominated, how did I behave differently than those that were female dominated? How could I lift up other women in meetings? Just recognizing that there is a cultural phenomenon when the superintendent of schools is a 41-year-old woman. I'm now 42, but I was 41 last year, versus people are used to seeing a 50, 60-year-old man.
I think that's a positionality and identity, and I'm the these are really important topics because I think it's not an even playing field, I guess, just to say kind of curtly and simply, and those dynamics play out in difficult conversations and leadership in action, for sure. It's funny, Heifetz really rings a bell, because I think I was reading that book when I was on the school board as a student back when I was quite a bit younger. I think it was Leadership Without Easy Answers or something that he wrote. I know he's at Harvard Business School, but or the Kennedy School. But I was sort of taking an interest and a fascination in that early on and maybe couldn't imagine as, you know, I won't say how old I was. I was probably barely 20 or probably 18 actually. But, you know, what, like for you and your personal journey in leadership, what were some of those milestones or what were some of the things that caught you on to the importance of leadership in your roles and your career trajectory?
One moment I had was when I had a collaborative meeting, but I was the principal and it was with deans from the schools and other teacher leaders. And they just weren't really getting the product going and had trouble putting things down on paper. And I would then be like, oh, what if we say this and kind of give the answer. And then I realized I was enabling the team to not generate a collaborative answer. And I also realized that my response, like when they did then generate a proposal, I needed to be really generous with it and not tear it down and then suggest my own, because I think I came at it kind of an overachiever. I have the right answer. And that stance, when I started, I was 28 years old. I was one of the youngest principals in New York City. It wasn't working for a sustainable life for me. Mm-hmm. So if as the leader, you're finding you're overworking, it's probably because you're not authorizing people, other people to lead. And for me, it was my perfectionism that had been taught to me from a very young age. Mm-hmm. People saw how I was hard on myself.
Yeah.
And then they were worried I would be hard on them. People yeah. saw how I would make sure something got done no matter what. And I had to learn to let other people drop balls
yeah.
and together pick them up so that they could do it, as opposed to me scrambling and fixing things.
That's an awesome example, because I like what you said about underpinning, knowing yourself, back to what you said earlier about vulnerability, you know, that we're all good enough. I feel like that in a personal way, quite vulnerably and courageously and confidently spoken here now, is very true for many of us. And I feel like I'll admit to the same tendencies of, well, you know, it's the classic, I'll just do this myself because it'll get done faster and better. But that's not leadership, you know, and in fact, that's probably disempowering those who have an opportunity to make a critical and timely mistake to learn from, or you know, a learning edge to push against. And I don't want to inhibit that from my team either. So mm-hmm. I think that's a critical insight. I wonder if, Phil, you're so patient. I wonder if we want to throw out the call signal and bring you into the conversation too, because you've been patiently and quietly observing yourself.
I have been listening to both of you and actually rather appreciating, especially the very last bit of your conversation, where you talk about letting people make mistakes, letting them learn from their mistakes, without maybe even noticing that you've noticed, without even letting them know that you've noticed, rather. You know, rather, I believe the way that people can ask questions is by writing to us right now at dj@kptz.org. And I'm looking here, and I don't see any questions as yet, but questions for Dr. Linda Rosenberry or for John Morrow can be sent right now by email only to dj@kptz.org. And thank you for the reminder, John. Well, it's interesting, the question about being supervised. I have worked nearly my entire life totally solo, meaning that I have not had supervision as near as I could tell, and I have tried to avoid supervising others. But now and again, I find myself in a position where people do have gentle authority over me. And I very much appreciate, this goes back to what you had said earlier, those who know when I need help and those who know when I don't. And I would say, especially in the case of Dr. Linda, I am ready to go to work for you anytime you need me. It will be a wonderful experience for me, and I hope for you as well. Question, however, has to do with something else. You talked about feedback. And you talked about feedback as in helping your staff to do their work better and to enjoy their work better. But how about feedback that is given to you? How do you, mind you, sometimes it's going to be cruel. Sometimes it actually will be in the best of good spirits. How do you handle it? How do you work with yourself to handle any kind of criticism, whether it's constructive or perhaps intentionally not? What, when you go home, when you put your head on the pillow, how do you deal with it? And either of you can start this, but I'd like to hear from both of you.
That's a great question. I mean, I have immediate answers, but maybe I should take my own advice that I was about to say, and I need to ponder it for a little bit, take it inside, wrestle with it, maybe not instantly react. Linda, if you want to go, feel free, but I can keep going. Yeah.
So I think the first thing goes back to knowing yourself. So I grew up as the youngest of four siblings, and I wanted nothing but approval from my siblings and my parents. So whenever I get feedback, my default response, so the response I do subconsciously is, oh no, I've done something wrong. I need to please this person. And so the first thing I do is allow myself to have that response, but then breathe through it and then reattach my current brain, not my childlike trigger, and say, what is this person saying? How can I respond? And how can I find the kernel of truth, even if it all seems off? So in my younger days, I might've said, well, actually that feedback had misinformation in it. Like perhaps it did, but that's not what is important. What is the kernel of truth, or what is the spirit of the feedback that tells me what someone else needs? And how could I respond better to that person? And even then, how can I make sure that it's not just for that person who was empowered to give me the feedback as superintendent of schools, but how could it help everyone? So one example to this past week was, there was concern about our lunch menu had too much beef in it, and how beef is killing the environment, contributing to climate change, which I agree with all that. And so I met with our director of food services and found out that the chicken was delayed from the federal government. The supply chain didn't allow us to get other chicken on time. And there actually were vegetarian options, but they weren't on the menu. And so instead of just writing back to that mom with the feedback about the options besides red meat, I'm now sending something out to all families next week, so everyone is aware. So that's another thing, is to try to generalize feedback. Once I hear it from one person, how could I now help everyone with what I've learned?
John, do you want to elaborate on your answer?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I really like this, because I think it actually came up in a public forum not too long ago during my annual review. And I both got some feedback that I take criticism really well and also not. So that gave me a lot to think about. I guess, you know, part of what I really appreciate about starting this conversation with Linda was the spirit of inquiry, you know, and if we truly are, as leaders or as humans, just trying to learn and grow and develop as people, as leaders, that spirit of inquiry is really important. And I think Linda said this, like an executive coach of mine from many years ago said, like, you know, feedback is a gift. And I truly believe that. And so I challenge myself in my immediate reactions of having strong opinions, which I do, or seeing the flaws in someone's feedback before I really feel the weight of it and feel the, you know, understand the meaning of it. I challenge myself to be patient and actually to really ruminate over it. And it's one of those things, I can't help but do so. I can't help be thinking about it as I'm running or as I'm, you know, trying to sleep or something like that. And usually foster a sense of gratitude. You know, if I could actively listen to when someone's giving me feedback, and I could thank them, and then actually it influences my behavior or perspective, they're going to be more willing to do that in the future. And I think back to psychological safety, which, you know, Linda raised earlier. I mean, I am so grateful that my department directors, especially because, you know, I am their supervisor, are, you know, almost to all of them, excellent at providing me feedback. And I think what I've tried to do is promote that by my response, because most of the feedback is actually really, really helpful. It's helped me see blind spots. It's helped me reconsider things. It's helped me change my opinion or even the direction of some big project or whatever it might be. So to shut that down is actually a disservice to an outcome and me as a growing professional. Creating a positive environment that feedback is willingly given, particularly for those where the power dynamic is different. You know, if people are reporting to me and I'm encouraging them to give me feedback, which I do, it's not an obvious thing for a quote, a subordinate to do to a supervisor. But boy, is it useful. They know you better than anybody else at the workplace.
Well, strictly speaking, we're out of time. However, I do want to ask one more question of Dr. Linda, and that is, it sounds like it has been a project, a self-project for you to learn how to take feedback. I'm starting as, you know, a really nice little girl who wanted to please everyone, to somebody who was responsible for many, many, many people, students and staff. But it sounds like you went through a process of learning how to accept criticism. And I'm curious how difficult that was and how you did it. And I'll give you 1 minute to answer that question.
Well, I was really blessed to have a full-time doctoral program that had an emphasis on adult development. And so we studied Robert Kagan's work, and Lisa Leahy was my coach for competing commitments. So the things that leaders sometimes hold on, say they want to do, but then there's something else that they're holding on to, like being good enough, that's competing with their ability to meet their goals. And so I was fortunate to have 2 years of that support in really unpacking how I came to be Linda, and how I wanted to be what the kids call me, Dr. Linda.
Well, well done, both of you. I do need to say that we have run out of time. This has been Brewocracy Now. Dr. Linda Rosenberry, Superintendent of Schools, Port Townsend Schools, and John Morrow, City Manager of Port Townsend. Do you want to say goodbye, John?
Phil, it's a pleasure. Thank you for hosting or co-hosting, and really grateful for Dr. Linda Rosenberry for being here today. I look forward to the next installment of our leadership miniseries.
Okay, I'm going to say goodbye to you both. And again, thank you both, too.